Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar, broadcasting from my home studio. Yesterday was history making. On a day when a joint session of the United States Senate and House of Representatives met to officially count electoral votes for president, normally little more than a perfunctionary duty, pro-Trump extremists stormed the U.S. Capitol, breaking windows, finding their way onto the floors of both chambers, into the offices of members of Congress, and resulting in injuries and shocking the world. Many are blaming President Trump for inciting the protesters of last November's election, which the president once again said inaccurately was stolen from him. Here's him, the president, yesterday before all these events.
And Mike Pence is going to have to come through for us. And if he doesn't, that will be a sad day for our country, because you're sworn to uphold our Constitution. Now it is up to Congress to confront this egregious assault on our democracy. And after this, we're going to walk down, and I'll be there with you. We're going to walk down anyone you want, but I think right here we're going to walk down to the Capitol. And we're going to cheer on our brave senators and congressmen and women. And we're probably not going to be cheering so much for some of them, because you'll never take back our country with weakness. You have to show strength, and you have to be strong.
Well, many of those protesters didn't walk down peacefully. Many ran to the Capitol and breached the security and made it inside the Capitol building. One of those people who attended the demonstration and the protest was former state representative and congressional candidate Rick Saccone.
We're live here in front of the U.S. Capitol. Hundreds of thousands of people storming the Capitol. They broke down the gates.
Yes.
They're macing them up there. We're trying to run out all the evil people in there and all the rhinos that have betrayed our president. We're going to run them out of their offices. And we're calling on Vice President Pence to support our president.
And around.
Oh, look at all these people. Look at all these people here. Hundreds of thousands. The fake news media won't tell you how many people are here, but I'm telling you, there are hundreds of thousands of people here to support our president and save our nation. Are you with me?
Yes.
Until next time.
In God we trust.
The crowd then ran up the steps and climbed walls to breach overwhelmed security forces. Windows were smashed. Members of Congress were told to evacuate and get their gas mask on. Vice President Mike Pence and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi were whisked to secure places. Protesters roamed the hallways and offices, some with Confederate flags. One woman was shot and killed, apparently by police. It took reinforcements, including the National Guard, to quell the riots. President-elect Joe Biden made a forceful statement denouncing the violence.
Let me be very clear. The scenes of chaos at the Capitol do not reflect a true America, do not represent who we are. What we're seeing are a small number of extremists dedicated to lawlessness. This is not dissent. It's disorder. It's chaos. It borders on sedition, and it must end now.
Republican U.S. Senator Mitt Romney, who was the Republican presidential nominee in 2012, laid the attacks at the feet of President Trump.
Today was heartbreaking, and I was shaken to the core as I thought about the people I met in China and Russia and Afghanistan and Iraq and other places who yearn for freedom and who look to this building and these shores as a place of hope. And I saw the images being broadcast around the world, and it breaks my heart. I have 25 grandchildren. Many of them were watching TV, thinking about this building, whether their grandpa was okay. Now we gather due to a selfish man's injured pride and the outrage of supporters who he has deliberately misinformed for the past 2 months and stirred to action this very morning. What happened here today was an insurrection incited by the President of the United States.
After hours' delay, both the Senate and House met to accept the electoral votes. Several of the senators and House members who planned to object didn't. But the Pennsylvania Republican congressman who said beforehand did object, including Scott Perry, Lloyd Smucker, and John Joyce. The Senate and House voted to accept the state's electoral votes. President Trump made a statement early this morning saying, "Even though I totally disagree with the outcome of the election and the facts bear me out, nevertheless, there will be an orderly transition on January 20th. Trump sent in a statement that was shared by Dan Scavino, the White House Deputy Chief of Staff for Communications. He said, "I've always said we would continue our fight to ensure that only legal votes were counted. While this represents the end of the greatest first term in presidential history, it's only the beginning of our fight to make America great again." As mentioned, that was on White House aides Dan Scavino's Twitter account, because Twitter shut down the president's account for 12 hours for making statements that could have incited violence or that were inaccurate. On today's program, we talk with several people about these extraordinary events of yesterday and what it all means. Joining us up front, Dr. Shirley Ann Warshaw, presidential historian, author, and professor of political science director of the Fielding Center for Presidential Leadership Study at Gettysburg College. Dr. Warshaw, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Scott. Thanks for having me.
If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Dr. Warshaw, so my first question is your response, your reaction to the events of yesterday.
Well, I was listening to your comments at the beginning and listening to President Trump talk. And he said this is an egregious assault on our democracy, referring to the election. It is actually the assault on the Capitol that's the egregious assault on our democracy. You know, as I was thinking about this, Scott, I was thinking more about how other countries view us. And in fact, we look more like a third world country. If you remember, Venezuela had a completely democratic election, and they did not elect Nicolas Maduro as its president. But he refused to leave. And in fact, he has the military backing him up. We, the United States, and most countries recognize the election of his opponent, not Maduro. But in spite of that, President Trump says that he wants to stay in office, just like Maduro. Luckily, our U.S. military is not going to support him. I also want to note what Mitt Romney said, that this is an insurrection. It actually was an insurrection trying to take over government. And that, unfortunately, was urged by the President of the United States. It is just unprecedented to see this. And it makes us look foolish in the eyes of the world.
Well, a little bit later in the program, we're going to be talking with a journalist from the United Kingdom with the BBC who has some reactions from around the world. You know, when you say that, Dr. Warshaw, you know, there were so many social media comments yesterday on Twitter, Facebook, and the others. One that I saw that kind of stuck out to me was that what we saw yesterday in Washington, the kind of discord, the violence, all that, is exactly what the Russians had been trying to do, to create that kind of chaos in the United States. And I'm not saying that what happened yesterday can directly be tied to the Russians. What I am saying is that they probably were pretty happy with what they saw yesterday.
Exactly. I mean, the fact that people were able to get into the United States Congress and wreak havoc in there. I mean, the pictures of people of the Capitol Police holding guns at the door to keep people from getting in is absolutely incredible. And the pictures of the people sitting in Speaker Pelosi's office, it is just unbelievable that this would happen in this country. And you know what? You have to lay this right on the steps of President Trump. He encouraged it. He encouraged every single step of this. I was reading this morning, and it's absolutely frightening, that he said that Vice President Pence was not doing his job in supporting the Constitution, that is allowing him to stay in office. And apparently all these people going down the streets and breaking of the Capitol were actually looking for Vice President Pence. They had on social media on these sites. Parlay is one of them and some others that I'm not sure about. But anyway, all of these sites were saying, where is he? We have to find him. That is absolutely frightening that the President of the United States would encourage his followers to go after the Vice President of the United States for doing his constitutional job.
Let's talk about that for just a moment, talk about what the Constitution says and what the Vice President's job is. The President has been saying for the last few days, and as you just referenced, he said if Mike Pence does his job. Well, what was Mike Pence's job yesterday in counting those electoral votes? He couldn't do anything, correct?
He couldn't do anything. He's a clerk. His only job is to stand up there and essentially call to order, close the order, and recognize the state certifications. He is a clerk. He has absolutely no power. It's important to note that we talk about this sort of old law, the Electoral Count Act of 1877. In the election of 1876, we saw Samuel Tilden, the Democrat, and Rutherford B. Hayes, the Republican, in a very bitter election, very similar to this. And when the election was called, neither side, it was very, very close in the Electoral College, neither side would recognize the electors of certain states, saying those four states had voter fraud, very much like we see today. So Congress refused to seat. The Democrats wouldn't seat the Republican electors, and the Republicans wouldn't seat the Democratic electors. They eventually had what's called a commission, and they had seven Democrats and seven Republicans on the commission, and then they had one member of the Supreme Court who they thought would be independent. Turns out the Supreme Court member voted for the Republican, and that's how Rutherford B. Hayes is seated. But the important point of this is Congress is so outraged by what happened that they passed this Electoral Count Act of 1877. And it said the states must certify the electors before they are sent to the Congress for counting. So what the law says now is that once the states, which has happened on December 14th, once the states certify the electors in their states, nothing can be done. So the Congress has nothing to do but essentially open the envelopes and count them. And he and Vice President is simply the clerk in charge of that.
So, you know, where could the president come up with this idea that the vice president could actually do something?
I have no idea. I think it's just a desperate, desperate attempt to try and stay in power. And good for Mike Pence for actually issuing that statement right before he walked into the joint session, in which he said, I have no power. I am essentially a clerk. That's what he said. And that's essentially what got President Trump very, very bent out of shape.
We're going to talk more, obviously, about this in just a moment. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF. You're home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. During today's program, we're speaking with several guests and you about the events of yesterday at the Capitol, U.S. Capitol in Washington, D.C. Our guest during this portion of the program is Dr. Shirley Ann Warshaw. She's a presidential historian, author, and professor of political science, and director of the Fielding Center for Presidential Leadership Study at Gettysburg College. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Dr. Warshaw, you were talking about the 1876 election and how we got the rules that we have now. What about some other history? Has anything, you know, a lot of people are pointing back to the British invading Washington, burning Washington in 1814 during the War of 1812. Is there anything that compares with yesterday in what happened in Washington?
Absolutely not. The only thing that comes, and this isn't even close, is that during the Civil War, Union soldiers were actually sleeping in the Capitol. But that doesn't, you know, that had nothing, that was nothing to do with this. No, we've never seen anything like it. We've had lots and lots of marches in Washington. We've had peaceful riots, marches. We've had some that had required more police protection. But we have a history in this country, as we should, of peaceful marches. That's what the Constitution is all about. We wanted to ensure that this country, unlike the country of England that we separated from in 1776, that we had a Constitution that actually allowed for people to protest their government. You couldn't protest your government in England. The king would cut off your head or something horrible like that. The point is that we want to allow people to protest, but we don't want to allow people to protest to breach the capital of the United States, where they are violating the very sanctity of government. That's very, very different than peaceful protest. No, we've never, ever seen anything like this. And many of your listeners are old enough to remember things like 1968, where in Chicago we had a very, very raucous Democratic National Convention. People were rioting in the streets. And that led, of course, to many, many marches in Washington against the war in Vietnam. We've never, ever seen people try to violate the capital of the United States of America. And it's a shame on this country.
Speaking of history, we have a history call from Carl in Lancaster. Carl, you're on the air.
Good morning, Carl.
Carl, are you there? Carl, are you there?
I think we lost him, Scott.
Yeah, I think we did lose him, too. He was going to ask about, okay, I think he's there. There you go, Carl. Go ahead,
Carl.
Good morning, Carl.
Do you hear me?
Yes, we do.
I do.
My question, the protesters yesterday had some sort of gripe, real or imaginary, but so did the American revolutionaries. It's important to recognize that the protest yesterday was in behalf of the leading government official, the president, whereas the American protesters, revolutionaries, used King George III as their symbol of protest, but they were really protesting not simply George III, but rather decisions of the government in England. Would you?
So your point is what, Carl?
In America, who did not go along with the revolution, were known as Tories, and that was a difficult discussion in those days. Madam Professor, would you comment on the philosophic differences between the protest against government yesterday and the American protest against established government at the time of the American Revolution?
All right, Carl, thanks. Go ahead, Dr. Warshaw.
First of all, Carl, remember that what happened yesterday was turning peaceful protests into essentially an insurrection where they attacked the capital of the United States. Just not acceptable. During the Revolutionary War, we were trying to establish ourselves as essentially an independent nation away from a tyranny of the executive, which is almost what you saw yesterday, and to establish a free and democratic country. You know, yesterday we were opposing democracy. It was what you saw were people going after our democratic institutions. Quite different situation.
Carl, thank you very much for your call. So what are the long-lasting impacts of this, Dr. Warshaw? I mean, as I said, that it obviously is a day that will live in infamy, will be long remembered, and we'll hear about it 100 years from now. Maybe we won't, but Americans will. What is the long-lasting impact of what happened yesterday?
Well, I think that we have tarnished our reputation. I mean, again, we all remember Tiananmen Square, and this is something that the Chinese government will long live with. I think for us to have the President of the United States inciting an insurrection will long be remembered and be a huge stain on the Trump administration. This morning, what you saw is numerous members of the White House staff have already resigned and discussed. And what's interesting is the White House counsel, Pat Cipollone, actually urged people yesterday not to be around the president because they could be accused of being part of an insurrection and violating the Sedition Act. I mean, it's frightening, absolutely frightening, that the White House counsel would tell people, stay away from the President of the United States. States because he is, in fact, encouraging an insurrection. You just can't make this stuff up. It's just beyond belief. And the fact that members of the cabinet today are trying to invoke the 25th Amendment because they feel that President Trump is so incredibly unstable is another clear indication that this presidency is under duress.
Well, we just had a question from a listener, Patrick, asking that question. Is this enough to invoke the 25th Amendment?
Well, it doesn't matter what's enough or not enough. The only thing the Constitution says in the 25th Amendment is that a majority of the cabinet and the vice president shall determine that the president cannot carry out his duties. The tragedy of this is that even if they should take, and they send a letter to Congress, let me add that, that says that, excuse me, but the tragedy of this is the way the 25th Amendment is written is that the president can say, I'm absolutely fine the next day. So it's really not a very effective way to change anything in Washington because the president can so quickly take back his powers.
You know, we have someone else. We're getting a lot of emails. And I'll try to get to as many as we can.
Okay.
We had someone who said, Marvin said, what about the Shays Rebellion in Massachusetts, the Whiskey Rebellion in Western Pennsylvania? They're not the same. They did not invade Washington, but they did rebel against the existing government. Wanted to point out some other points.
What Shays Rebellion was all about is that they felt that they were unfairly burdened with the taxes. That's a completely different situation.
Dr. Shirley Ann Warshaw is a presidential historian, author, and professor of political science and the director of Fielding Center for Presidential Leadership at Gettysburg College. Dr. Warshaw, always good to talk to you. Thank you for being with us today.
Thanks. My pleasure, Scott. Have a great day.
Okay. I want to bring in now another political science professor from the area. Dr. Fletcher McClellan is professor of political science at Elizabethtown College. Dr. McClellan, welcome to the show.
Hi, Scott. Thanks for having me.
I know that, you know, that last question we had from a listener about the 25th Amendment.
Right.
There have been a number of organizations. There have the American Manufacturers Association, which has typically been a supporter of Republican candidates, including President Trump, has called for the president to step down or be removed today. Lancaster Online, LNP, in an editorial today said, remove President Trump. I know you are amongst a group of political science professors across the country that have signed on to that. Tell me why.
Well, the of course, what happened yesterday was absolutely shocking. And unfortunately, I think it was sort of a logical conclusion of the last couple of months and actually the whole Trump presidency has been leading up to this. Going back to Charlottesville, his refusal to condemn white supremacy during the campaign, saying that he couldn't guarantee that he would honor the result of the election, we'd have to see. He couldn't promise that there would be an orderly transition of power. Of course, we know what happened after the election, all the shenanigans he and his supporters played on the American public, and his role in the last few weeks in promoting this rally yesterday, his remarks, and this extraordinary series of events that took place yesterday. I know he promised very early this morning, at least through his representative, that he's going to play nice now. But even as late as last night, his attorney, Rudy Giuliani, was calling people, senators, to come up with more objections, drag out the process as long as possible. I think he bears, President Trump bears enormous responsibility for what happened yesterday. I think there was an intent to create havoc at the Capitol, shut it down in order for the president to declare martial law or issue some sort of emergency order. That is a threat to the Republic. I'm also of a mind that, you know, the lax or ineffective security yesterday at the Capitol was no accident. You've mentioned that when it was Black Lives Matter protesting in the Capitol, we had a tremendous show of force. Nothing like that happened yesterday. He's removed people in such as the Attorney General, the former Secretary of Defense, other officials, replaced them with loyalists. And one has to wonder whether this is an accident. One more thing I'll say is, what eventually, brought the protest or the insurrection to an end was a greater show of force. And that was pretty much instigated by the acting Secretary of Defense working with and authorized by the vice president. No mention of the president. He was not going to be the one to bring an end to this. The vice president, and one has to give him tremendous respect for his performance yesterday in the Senate, and then helping to bring an end to the violence. So I think he remains a threat. President Trump remains a threat to the Republic and should be removed either by him stepping down or through use of the 25th Amendment or use of the impeachment power.
Now, remember, I'm sure everyone knows, that we have less than 2 weeks to go before Joe Biden is inaugurated as president. Why remove President Trump with just 2 weeks to go?
Because he is still at work. He is still at work plotting to overturn the results of a free and fair election. You had this letter from the 10 former secretaries of defense, including two he appointed, declaring that the military should not, get involved in election disputes. Once again, one has to wonder why this letter was necessary. And I think yesterday was proof of this. Even in his statements yesterday and tweets, the president and some of his supporters in Congress decried the violence, or at least his supporters in Congress did, but did not dispute the election result. And the claims, the charges, the allegations of election fraud, there's simply no evidence of it. Frankly, this election wasn't that close. Well, let's put it this way. 7 million vote margin is pretty substantial. It makes it one of the larger popular vote victories in this century and even before that. But of course, 43,000 votes, 43,000 votes had changed in three states, and this sounds a lot like 4 years ago. If they had changed from Biden to Trump, Trump would be on his way to a second term.
You mentioned the members of Congress who were objecting to the electoral votes being accepted. Pennsylvania was one of the states that was held up as why those votes shouldn't be accepted. Senator Josh Hawley, Republican, went on about Pennsylvania. There were a number of Republican members of Congress and eight here from Pennsylvania who were objecting to the results in their own state. There were many Pennsylvanians, including U.S. Senator Pat Toomey, who came out and said there was no problem, there was no fraud in Pennsylvania. Yeah, there were some problems, maybe some confusion over direction from the governor's office, from the Secretary of State. Now, there are Republican state legislators who disagree with that as well. But there are a lot of people who are looking at those members of Congress as being partially responsible for what happened yesterday. Would you agree with that?
Indirectly, I think, to the extent that they perpetuate these false allegations about election fraud. Now, Pennsylvania does, I think, have a, among the states, Pennsylvania does have an outsized role in this whole controversy. And of course, this goes back to 2 years ago when the legislature passed mail-in voting without excuses, the pandemic, where there were extended deadlines for voting and for the receiving of votes. In the legislature, they failed to come to an agreement, the Republican leadership failed to come to an agreement with Governor Wolf about a pre-packaging or pre-canvassing ballots to allow the vote to be counted more quickly. As you know, it really wasn't until Saturday that there, after the election, that there was a result that was declared. And as a result, you know, there were several days of counting, and this permitted the president and his supporters, including those in Pennsylvania, to say that somehow, you know, something is wrong here. Enabled him to sort of make that case that, you know, he won on election night and somehow something happened in between to render the election fraudulent. So, and of course, since that time, we've had our legislators holding kind of fake hearings, the one in Gettysburg where Rudy Giuliani testified. They've been wined and dined by the president at the White House. Pennsylvania state senators were invited there. Pennsylvania's representatives, both at the state level and members of Congress, I think, do share some responsibility. But there is a distance between their role in this and the events of yesterday, which were, you know, frankly, organized and egged on by the president.
Let's take a phone call from Bill. Bill, you're on the air.
I would like to say two things. First of all, I am incensed by what happened and the stupidity of the whole thing. And then the second thing I would like to say, I would like to put out a call to all our representatives, state and federal, to put out some sort of a missive, email, statement, something that everybody can have, telling the world how they are 100% opposed to what went on, and that they, the conservatives, are dedicated to conservative principles of fiscal responsibility, adherence to the Constitution, appropriately regulated regulations and laws, and particularly to Mr. Smucker, who still wanted to vote against this whole thing. I think he is outstanding in his field too long, and there's a cannot tell the difference between the patties left by the cows after they leave and the truth.
Bill, thank you very much for your call. Dr. McClellan?
Well, I think there should be a much clearer, and I agree with the caller, unanimous affirmation of this election outcome by our representatives at the state and federal level. Leadership has to step up. And, you know, this is the same so-called fraudulent election that elected, that has elected or reelected the members of Congress and state representatives. And for them to sort of separate the presidential election as fraudulent while theirs wasn't, when all of it is on the same ballot, is patently absurd. You know, let's step back a little bit. What are we talking about here? We're talking about, you know, one of the, you know, fundamental principles of democracy, which is that the will of the people in elections should be honored. And losers, you know, should accept the result and say, you know, better luck next time, try harder. Winners should be humble. They should not try to eliminate their critics. They should permit, you know, right of criticism. They should allow opponents to form political parties. That's the deal. And if one side breaks that deal and says, I'm sorry, you know, I can't accept the result, that endangers democracy. I mean, you know, there's lots of things I'd like to change. I wish the 64 Phillies had won the pennant. I wish Alabama hadn't stopped Penn State at the goal line in the 1979 Sugar Bowl. There's lots of things that, we lose and then, there's another election. There's another championship game. There's something like, that, and that's the bargain that we make. And, just imagine if the House had not been controlled by Democrats yesterday, how things might have changed. You could have had House and Senate controlled by Republicans and orchestrated by Trump, voting to invalidate or refuse to accept the electors coming from blue states. And we weren't that far away from having that outcome. And I'm afraid this is setting an alarming precedent that very possibly could repeat again if there is no remedial action taken.
Virginia asks, is it true that if Trump were to be impeached, he would not be allowed to run for president again? Can the impeachment begin and or conclude after he is out of office? I mean, is that even a realistic impeachment? Is that even realistic at this point?
Only if you know it's not, but that's only because, you need 67 votes in the Senate, which means you would need, 18 votes, 18 Republican votes. I saw some very upset Republican members, and you mentioned Senator Romney, but just practically speaking, that's the barrier. And the caller is right that impeachment also includes the provision that the person who's impeached and removed cannot run again for federal office. And that, of course, would preclude President Trump from running for president or any other federal office in 2024.
So could the president, the question Virginia had, could the president be impeached after he leaves office on the 20th of January?
Well, that I'm not clear of, to be quite honest with you. Obviously, it's never happened before. The quicker way, the more immediate way, but this would require the vice president, the majority of cabinet to say that the president is unable to perform his duties and the vice president is stepping in. That would be the quickest way and would avoid the whole matter of trying to round up votes in the Senate. Of course, the president can then, under the 25th Amendment, say, listen, I'm fit. I'm back in charge. And then the vice president and the cabinet have to read the 25th Amendment sometime. It's fascinating. But then the vice president and the majority of the cabinet say, you really are unfit, Mr. President. We're taking over. And then Congress has to resolve the dispute between the vice president and the cabinet on the one hand and the president on the other.
Dr. Fletcher McClellan is a professor of political science at Elizabethtown College. Dr. McClellan, always good talking with you. Thanks for being with us today.
Same here, Scott. Thanks a lot.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. Our guest and many people over the past day and a half have been talking about the reaction around the world to what we saw yesterday at the U.S. Capitol, especially from Russia and China, some of the adversaries of the United States. We're joined now by Simona Krylova, who is an editor at BBC Monitor, to talk about those reactions from around the world. Simona Krylova, welcome to the program.
Hello, and thank you for having me on the program.
You do monitor reactions from other countries around the world. I can't ask the broad question of, well, yes, I will. Generally, what have the reactions been to what happened yesterday at the U.S. Capitol?
Of course, I can possibly start by offering you a broader picture of how the world has responded to the turbulent events in Washington last night and this morning. And then we can perhaps have a more granular look at some of the countries that you've already mentioned. So as you can imagine, the events in Washington have been dominating news agendas around the world. And if I can sort of sum it up briefly, it's shock, dismay, and contempt mostly for the violent storming of America's Capitol by Donald Trump supporters. This is evident in many reports and commentary on the event from around the globe that we have seen this morning. I would say that much of the world's media is united in its criticism of Donald Trump over the siege on Congress. So, for example, in Germany, you've got Die Welt, one of the dailies, describing it as disturbing, sad, and terrifying. Even in Nigeria, there are dailies suggesting that Trump supporters have defiled US democracy. So very powerful headlines that we see around the world. Others say the events raise doubts over the US claims to be a leading world power. There was a really telling headline in one of the Egyptian dailies suggesting that Donald Trump might be even tried after this turmoil, adding the US is no longer a superpower in the full sense of the world. So, as I said, very powerful commentary. You mentioned the US adversaries. Some of them really took the opportunity to criticize the country. So you mentioned China, you mentioned Russia, so we can have a closer look at these countries. But as I said at the beginning, it's shock and dismay, really, that we see in the global headlines at the moment.
Well, I want to go back for just a moment. You mentioned Nigeria, you mentioned Egypt. Maybe it's American arrogance, but when many Americans hear what you just said, they may think to themselves, America, we think of what happened yesterday at the U.S. Capitol as something that happens in third world countries that have unstable governments, that maybe there's a coup d'etat or the military has an outsized role in a country, that we don't think of that in the United States. So I think it's to point out that countries like Nigeria, and I'm not putting those countries down, I'm just saying that when countries like Nigeria, Egypt are criticizing the United States and questioning their role in the world, I mean, that has to say something to Americans, I would think.
Absolutely. And I think this is pretty much the picture we see in many parts of the world where you would not usually see, this is unprecedented, we would not normally see these headlines coming out of those countries. So you're spot on. This is absolutely right. We mentioned Russia earlier, and I was just going to go back to it because we did take a closer look at how the events have been reported there. So don't forget, in Russia, it is Orthodox Christmas Day. So normally you'd see a lot of festive scenes and the TV and radio programming would be reflecting that. But today we have seen a lot of reporting of the events in the US. Some Russian TV channels are showing sympathy for the pro-Trump supporters who have stormed the Capitol, suggesting that they had cause to feel cheated over November's presidential election. They're also talking up claims that the events in Washington represent a crisis for the US and even Western democracy. So this is very, very evident in the Russian TV reporting this morning. There's also a lot of comment on the woman who was shot. Obviously, there are four victims, but the woman who was shot dead during the seizure of the Capitol. So, for example, the state TV channel Russia 24 described her as a US Air Force veteran who had defended America for 14 years and was killed by a police bullet for what she believed was true democracy. So these are really powerful headlines, again, coming out of Russia. China, very similarly, very powerful headlines there. We didn't see a lot of reaction to start with, but later in the day, there's been a lot of reaction in China. The top line there from the state media is that the US needs to take a hard look at itself. And it talks about the dissatisfaction of American citizens suggest that basically the US needs to take a look at itself before pointing the finger at China. So this is very, very telling again. We had a very interesting observation submitted by one of our Chinese watchers saying that state Chinese TV has pinned on its Weibo page a picture of Chinese medical workers pulling together in freezing conditions to deliver COVID aid, alongside a picture of pro-Trump demonstrators climbing the walls of Capitol Hill. And the headline there is, on the same day, two very different scenes in China and the US. And some of the outlets in China have gone even further, and they're putting up pictures of yesterday's scenes alongside some images from the 2019 Hong Kong protests. So that parallel's being drawn there. So again, a very interesting angle from China.
I have to tell you that, Simona, that just as you're describing this as an American, it makes me feel bad. I'm listening to this and I'm thinking this is how the world is looking at what happened at the United States yesterday, something that we never, as Americans, thought that we would ever see. You are in the United Kingdom with the BBC. What about the reaction in the United Kingdom from our closest ally, United States' closest ally?
Absolutely. I mean, so far, I have been offering you views and observations from the global media. So on the UK, I can offer you my personal perception, my sort of personal perspective. So I must say, you know, we were all getting ready to go to bed when the scenes emerged from Washington. And I know that myself and fellow journalists here in London and elsewhere in the UK, we were just watching it with incredulity. And one of my friends, a fellow journalist in London, messaged me asking, is this for real? And I think for me, that really captured that kind of sense of incredulity, that are we really seeing this coming out of Washington? On the political scene, I was chatting to my colleagues on the UK news desk earlier, and there was one specific angle that they focused on. I think this is along the lines of British diplomacy traditionally focused on getting along with the US, regardless of their politics or character. And they noted that the UK leaders, namely Prime Minister Boris Johnson and Foreign Secretary Dominic Raab, were quite reluctant initially to criticise the president by name in their initial response overnight. So later in the day, Home Secretary Priti Patel did say that the president's words actually fueled the violence and he didn't do anything to de-escalate it, but it did take quite a few hours. And some of the political commentators point out that, in contrast, European leaders were really quick to blame the president personally. So, for example, we've got Angela Merkel in Germany or Emmanuel Macron in France, a whole raft of European leaders really quick to point the finger of blame directly at Donald Trump. Here in the UK, it took quite some time, and I think a lot of political commentators are suggesting this is down to the kind of political setup and the diplomacy focus here in the UK. But personally, absolutely, it is I still kind of feel a sense of shock that we should be seeing these scenes coming out of Washington.
I'm curious now, we only have about 2 minutes. BBC World News shown obviously around the world, and I'm curious how much coverage BBC is devoting to this. I mean, is this the top story in the UK as well, and around the world?
Absolutely. I mean, especially on our global section, obviously, as you can imagine, this is the top story, especially when we've got a lot of international global reaction coming in. There's a lot of political commentary coming in as well. We obviously have COVID on the agenda. That's not gone anywhere, but this is absolutely one of the top stories that we're looking at today. So you can see that reflected in broadcast output. You can see this very prominently reported on the BBC News website. So for any more information, do feel free to visit the website or tune in to some of our programs.
Way to get that promo in there, Simona. Simona Krylova is editor at BBC Monitor. I want to thank you very much for being with us today.
You're very welcome, and thank you for having me.
That was very fascinating, an interesting perspective of what is happening around the world, how the world is perceiving the events of yesterday at the U.S. Capitol in Harrisburg, or excuse me, U.S. Capitol in Washington. Speaking of which, the state capitol in Harrisburg is shut down today. In fact, I understand that there were a number of institutions around the country that are closed today for maybe just to be on the safe side, to be cautious with after the events of yesterday. Obviously, this is something we'll be talking about a lot more in the coming days. But coming up on tomorrow's program, Right now, the plan is for discussing overdose deaths that are rising during the pandemic and pharmacists talking about administering the vaccine. The world does go on with some other issues. I'm Scott Lamar. Have yourself a good day.